Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi. And welcome to this edition of A Climate Hawk's Companion, a podcast that gives thoughtful people some information and background to help better understand the big issues related to global warming and hopefully provoke some thought-provoking conversation. Today, we are very happy to be joined by Rachel Geiger. How are you doing, Rachel?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Rachel is currently a rising senior at Mount Holyoke College and has been studying lots and lots of things, it turns out. She's she's in what's called a critical social thought major, which is a fabulous kind of description. But Rachel is what I would call a climate hawk, someone who understands the issues, is taking action, and is committed to making the world a better place. That's high praise, Rachel, but would you accept that? Do you think that that's kind of a description of where you are?
Thank you. I'd say that's what I'm working on being.
I think you do. So tell me, Rachel, you were have planned to be doing some environmental sustainability work around climate change this summer. Can you tell me about what internships you've got?
Yeah, I have two fellowships, both part-time. One is the Fossil Free Fellowship with 350.org, and they partnered me with the Center for Economic Democracy, and I'll be working with them this summer. And I hope to work with them on stuff related to reinvestment, mm-hmm. which means reinvesting stocks after divesting them from the fossil fuel industry and looking into how to make that environmentally, economically, socially, and politically sustainable investing, and also, yeah,
that's interesting. So interesting idea. You're saying that once, so now UMass recently has divested, so they have a lot of money, and that's coming out of the, say, their Exxon stock, and you're going to be thinking about ways, places to put that money that are socially constructive instead of just investing it in, I don't know, some kind of broad range of standard things. Well, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. So, I mean, I guess one of the questions I have is how someone such as yourself, who's now in college, under a lot of pressure to do a lot of different things, trying to define your life, how do you arrive at seeing these issues of sustainability as being worth your time? I mean, what's the thought process? How did you get there?
Well, to me, it's the most important thing facing my generation. The timeline of climate change is paramount. It's sooner than we thought, and it keeps being sooner than we thought because climate change is like this human-expedited climate change, I should say, is like this big experiment that humanity has never gone through before, the Earth's never gone through before, and the science and the research keeps coming out as sounding more and more bleak, basically. Mm-hmm. And the thing that gives me hope is taking action and taking part.
Interesting. So did you were probably a child when the Al Gore movie came out, right? You probably may or may not have seen the Inconvenient Truth over the 10 years or so since it came out. Do you have any sort of memories of specific things where you say, oh boy, that the penny dropped and you realized that this was an issue? Was it high school where you did a paper in high school or something? Or how about that?
Yeah, I do. So I'm not sure when it exactly started for me. I grew up in a pretty liberal household. I kind of grew up hearing about it and hearing about things like Al Gore and An Inconvenient Truth. And in elementary school, going to a public school, they kind of gave me this view of the environment as, you know, just pick up your trash, recycle, and it'll all be fine. The EPA says it'll be fine, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And then in high school, I went to a screening of Bill McKibben's Do the Math tour.
Oh, really? Okay.
350.org. And I saw their short video summarizing what he wrote about in his article for Rolling Stones. Mm-hmm. About climate change and really needing to take action on it soon. And that got me really thinking, this is so important. This is coming down on us. I need to take action. And then I was at the time going to go into my senior year of high school soon. And then I decided to sign up for environmental science for my senior year of high school. And in college, got involved in whatever ways I could.
Really? So do you find that you've got a community of people that are like-minded at Mount Holyoke?
I do. I would say that I find that in Mount Holyoke's Climate Justice Coalition, the organization at Mount Holyoke that I do my climate justice stuff on campus with. Mm-hmm. It's also the fossil fuel divestment campaign on campus. And we also coordinate some with other climate activists, students in the Five College Network, mm-hmm. especially Hampshire College. They're very active with that, and I would say there's quite the climate justice community over there.
So if you were to meet someone of your own age or, you know, yeah, so let's just say of your own age, how, and that they were not climate activists, what kinds of things would you point out, or what would you want them to know? And I ask that because I think you're an example of someone who has, who understands the issue, is a leader, and is an example for other people to kind of pick up, no matter how old you are, is to become aware of things. And so the question then becomes: if you were talking to someone, say, "Look, this is what you need to understand." Is it a fact-based approach that you would take with him, or would you sort of bring up an emotional connection to, you know, the trees and the air? What do you think works better from your perspective?
Well, I think it completely depends on the person. In general, are you talking about someone who's a climate denier, or someone who's just
I mean, most the climate deniers are a lunatic fringe, right? Most people are in the middle. Most people are a little bit worried. They just haven't quite got off the dime and realized, you know, they didn't see the Bill McKibben movie, right? So how do you help them down the path?
Okay, well, like I said, it depends on the person, but in general, I would definitely bring up a little bit of both. I think a lot of people kind of dismiss the emotional side and say, oh, you know, tree huggers, as if that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Although one should note there is psychological research now showing just how good for us being in nature is, actually. Mm-hmm. But I would talk about some of the science for sure, and probably some articles and facts that I know, but definitely bring some emotion into it too. And
it's funny, I remember when I began my own sort of walk down this path, I was challenged by one of the people who I considered kind of a mentor to explain, you know, why, what's the, I'll use the word again, emotional. I mean, what's the crux? And I came up with a story at the time. Well, I'm still a physicist, but I talked about the elegance of the whole scientific part. But I also came up with this story about how I had grown up in a place near the beach, and I knew what hurricanes did. I knew how much damage they caused. And, you know, reading about how the hurricanes would potentially increase in intensity, put all this stuff that I loved at risk. And that all of a sudden becomes a much more, you know, a touchstone. And I think that it's something that everyone out listening should just try and think about. It's not an easy thing to do, and it keeps changing for me. My own justifications have changed over the years. But the, you know, that sort of emotional core is a very interesting thing to track. And most people don't think of it that way. Most people think of, as I used to say, I thought that if I just explained how infrared light got trapped by carbon dioxide molecules, everyone would get it. Right? I found out that, no, it doesn't quite work that way. So, well, tell me, Rachel, the looking forward again, you're still in college. Do you have any sense of, shall we say, resentment or anger or forgiveness to people like me that are older and have, you know, basically caused a lot of the issues, and now you're going to be left to figure out what's going on with it and how to deal with it? Or, I mean, hopefully you'll say that you're forgiving, but I mean, someone like yourself who faces this as an overriding issue in their life and knows about it, what's your take on things?
Mm-hmm. Ted, I would have to say no. I don't see it fully as along generational lines. Mm-hmm. To an extent, that's there, but there are people in your generation like you who are doing all you can to help combat climate change and kind of make up for what your generation did. If I had one group that I like kind of struggle with, like just overall resenting a bit, it would be the super wealthy. Mm-hmm. Because if you're hoarding wealth and resources at the expense of other people in the world, well, there are people starving, and there are issues such as climate change that need to be addressed mm-hmm. with resources and time and money, mm-hmm. then I think that's unforgivable. But I don't harbor a resentment towards the older generations as a whole.
Well, that's, I'm glad to know that, Rachel. It's the best thing, you know, carrying, well, anyway, you're wise beyond your years. So tell me, we mentioned, talked before about various kinds of pipeline projects. Are you involved in any of the, of course, in Massachusetts now, the big remaining pipeline is the Spectra Energy Pipeline that's slated to run through the southern part of the state. Do you have any affiliation with anybody that's working on that?
This summer, they have a summer climate justice fellowship, and they're actually fundraising for that right now. And I can tell listeners how to contribute to that if they're interested. At the
absolutely
end of this podcast.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I can actually mention that right now if you want. There's a website, betterfutureproject.nationbuilder.com/support. Mm-hmm. That little line thing that's at the bottom, summer, that little line thing again, yeah. Fellows. And you can contribute online there, or you can make a checkout or cash to Better Future Project, specifying in the memo, if it's a check, that it is for the Climate Justice Fellowship. There's more information online. That fellowship is going to be... That fellowship is going to be focused on building political resistance to that specific pipeline that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how will you be going about that? Do you know yet? I know you haven't begun, but what's your expectation?
I do. We're going to be doing some work with connecting people, and we're going to be doing some canvassing, and we also are going to be big mobilization, which I can't give much details on yet.
Oh, that's right. There's a march along the pipeline route coming up in June, isn't there?
Yes, it's actually going to be in July.
Okay. But there's an effort to have a group of people walk the Spectra Pipeline group. Right, I saw that somewhere. I'll put that link in the show notes.
So. Okay.
Well, I think that so tell me. Where do you think, or where would you like, sort of the clean energy global warming situation to be in 20 years? I mean, do you have some view to that? And I guess the question, how do you think we're going to get there? Do you think it's going to be steady progress? Do you think it's going to be through big breakthroughs? I mean, have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, it's hard to get an overall vision, and no one can really predict the future, but we need nations to work together and not point fingers at each other and say, you know, you first, you first USA, you first China, etc. The United Nations came out with a set of goals not too long ago, and they looked good in some ways. They were critiqued for being too broad sometimes, and there are various systems that people have come up with. Like, there's a wedges system that tries to break down a transition into reasonable steps. And did you say 20, 30 years?
Well, yeah, whatever.
I mean, at that point, honestly, we would need to be transitioned, but there are a lot of there are a lot of infrastructure problems to overcome when it comes to transitioning away from fossil fuels. And another thing that I've been thinking about a lot is how environmental and economic justice need to come together. Because if we destroy the planet and our coastlines and each other, it won't matter. And as I've been thinking about things like jobs, I've also been thinking about how they say robots are going to change the future of jobs. And there have been people speculating, you know, if more and more computerized technology takes over more and more jobs, maybe we need livelihood to be based on something other than jobs. And it seems that there's so much work that needs to be done in the world to fix problems of environmental issues and hunger and poverty and violence. And yet then there's so many people unemployed. And it just seems like this jigsaw puzzle that we need to put together as humanity, like, to make a sustainable future.
I think that's
it. I don't know if it'll be general or I don't know if it'll be broad, like, slow progress or breakthroughs. I imagine that there will be some breakthroughs and some periods of steady change.
Well, Rachel, I want to thank you very, very much for taking the time to chat. You're clearly a very intelligent young woman who knows your stuff and is well-spoken, and I am proud to say a climate activist, a climate hawk out there. What we'll do is to put up links to some of the things that you and I have talked about, and you know, so that people can go, and certainly place to contribute to support the kind of fellowships you're working on would be great. Let me tell everyone who's listening that they can check out the links to most of what we talk about at the blog is massclimateaction.net/blog. You can find the show on Facebook. We'll post it on Facebook, and you can follow the links to get to the show itself. You can pick up the show on Stitcher or iTunes or TuneIn Radio, of course. And so we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So again, Rachel, thank you very much for being here, and I wish you great good luck this summer and with your general career, okay?
Thank you.
And I want to thank everyone for listening. We really appreciate you being here. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Climate Hawks Companion.